Reading is from 2 Corinthians 4, 3 through 5. And even if our gospel is veiled, it is veiled to those who are perishing. The God of this age has blinded the minds of unbelievers so that they cannot see the light of the gospel that displays the glory of Christ, who is the image of God. For what we preach is not ourselves, but Jesus Christ as Lord, and ourselves as your servants for Jesus' sake.
I didn't see a clock, so I'm going to keep a phone up here to stay in line. I asked Steve this morning if he wasn't sure he didn't dial the wrong phone number when he asked me to come and speak. I am humbled greatly to be asked to be here and to fill in this morning. I have my daughter Sarah and her husband Brett in Brooklyn with us, my granddaughter. I'm not sure that it made the front page of the sports in the Star-Telegram, but her 8-year-old soccer team won a game yesterday with a score of 3-2. Probably didn't quite make it, but it should have. And we're Southside to Foster's home is the home of Chloe Carter, former board member for, 12 to 15 years, one of my mentors through the years. The late L.G. Lacey was a board member for a long, long time at Foster's home. You've had other men who have served on our foundation board and in various capacities. You won our golf tournament for a number of years running, and that's this Thursday again if you want to enter that back in and try to regain your title in Glenrose. But this church means a lot to the 60 to 65 kids we have at Foster's home. You're investing in their lives, and my promise to you is that we regard your gift as seriously as you give it. And with all the integrity we give a community of healing to those kids at Foster's home that you have a hand in. Steve told me what your theme was, and I would suggest a change to the banner. Just one word change. You have a church becoming a gospel community, and I would suggest the change, a church demonstrating a gospel community. Because this church is about as good as I know in our brotherhood of doing what God called us to do. Now, I know you've got problems and you've got difficulties as any church does, but I'll tell you this, you are a model among churches for what ministry is all about, for what community is all about, for what God envisioned in the church and what it's to be in the community in which it sits. You are a church that has a huge light in our brotherhood in regard to what you do. You may already know that. I don't want to give you the big head, but I would just tell you that I speak of this church in very high regard. Your ministers are servants. There is no ego among any of them that I've ever met. Your elders are shepherds in the truest sense of the word. You are servants in every sense of the capacity in this community and in this area of Fort Worth. And so I kind of want to keep with the theme that you have for this year with the text out of 2 Corinthians. I want to tell you about four people real quickly. John Elway was of course, National Football League player, a quarterback. Years ago, invested $15 million in a hedge fund that turned out to be a Ponzi scheme. Cheryl Swoops was a star in the WNBA, made over $50 million in her career, and a few years later was $750,000 in debt, filed for bankruptcy in 2004. Johnny Unitas, those of us older remembered, was a quarterback, I believe, for the Baltimore Colts. Retired from football in 1973, was filed for bankruptcy in 1991. Eric Dickerson was the fastest running back in the NFL to reach the 10,000-yard level. Had dinner with a man in Canton, Ohio at a Hall of Fame dinner. And this man convinced him that he was an Italian noble, that he had all the ways to multiply Eric's money, and turned out to be a Ponzi scheme, and Eric lost his investments with that. And that's four athletes that we probably know the names of. There's probably a number of us could raise our hand and say, we have lost treasure, we have lost investments with people who weren't what they were supposed to be. I lost 3 years of of retirement income to a fraud. And so there's none of us immune to that, but I want to raise the question, as God will address a few verses later in the text in 2 Corinthians, who would God entrust with his treasure? And we have all kinds of opportunities. We have financial advisors, we have banks, we have safety deposit boxes. I've got one. We've got our will, our advance directives in it, our power of attorney, car titles, and all those things. Where do you put your trust? Where do you put your valuables? Where do you entrust the things that matter most to you? Into whose trust do you give that? And if we were to personify God, into whose trust would he give his greatest treasure? So I want you to pick up where the reading left off in 2 Corinthians 4 and continue reading with me in verse 5. We don't preach ourselves. Actually, this was read, but we'll read it again. But Christ Jesus is Lord, and ourselves as your bondservants for Jesus' sake. For God, who said, "Light shall shine out of darkness," is the one who has shown in our hearts to give the light of the knowledge of the glory of God in the face of Christ. But we have this treasure in earthen vessels, that the surpassing greatness of the power may be of God and not from ourselves. And then he'll mention some things we may look at briefly in a minute. After 27 years at Foster's Home, I am convinced more than ever that we heal in community. We heal in a body of plurality where we have the resources to help each other. And I'm convinced the church is the illustration of that healing community that God intended when his son died, that God would create the body of which Jesus is the head, that would be the vehicle for mankind to learn and understand what God did at the cross. That the church becomes that conduit for God's message. He as much as said so when he said, God who shone in our hearts to give the light of the knowledge of the glory of God in the face of Christ. God who called light out of darkness. Paul goes back to the creation account. Verifies what Genesis says, that God said there was light, and there was light. The same power that he had to create light out of darkness is the same power he shown within us when he blessed us with the light of the knowledge of the glory of God through the gospel. And so our message is not ourselves. Our message is not our ego. Our message is not how good we are, or what we can do, or how great we are. But our message is what God can do through us and what God chooses to do through us. In all of humanity, God has always chosen people as the conduit of his message. At least most of humanity. At one time, he wrote, Paul would say in the previous chapter, he wrote his commandments on tablets of stone. Now he has written them on the tablets of human hearts. And God chose through the transmission of the message now to use people to speak to people. And he has chosen us to be the conduit of the message to the world around us. Paul says we have this treasure. Literal word is thesaurus. Everybody knows what a thesaurus is, I think. It's a big, huge book. If you want to look up a word and find out other variations of what that word could mean, it is literally a wealth of words. Paul said God's thesaurus, his treasure, is in earthen vessels. I'm not going to ask for a show of hands because I wouldn't want anybody to raise their hand. But how many of you have your securities and your valuables buried out in the backyard in a clay pot? How many of you have stuffed that in the mattress, the proverbial money in the mattress? How many of you stick it out in the garage on a shelf in an old coffee can, put a lid on it, and make it blend in with everything else? We don't put treasure in insecure places. We don't put treasure in places that we don't trust. nor does God. In all the ways he chose for the transmission of generation to generation of his gospel, he chose you. He chose me. He chose people to be the messengers. Even the babies, the impressive demonstration this morning of commitment to families and their newborns, he has entrusted to parents to teach their children. The psalmist would say, so that they can teach their children, that they can teach the children yet to be born, that they would put their confidence in God. God has always counted on people to transmit the message. He has trusted in earthen vessels. And here's our response to that. I'm not worthy. Or I can't do that. And in one sense, both of those statements are absolutely true. In another sense, both of those statements are absolute cop-outs and excuses. When you're called upon to serve and your knee-jerk response is, I can't do that, as an excuse, that's invalid. If your response is, I can't do that because I don't know how, you're absolutely right. You can't, but God can. If your response is, I'm not worthy enough to serve as a teacher, elder, deacon, if that's an excuse, you're wrong. If that is a conviction, you're right, because you're not worthy enough. But God can make you worthy. God can qualify you, Paul said to the Corinthians, to serve in various ways among his people. Because it doesn't depend on us. It doesn't depend on how good you are, how sharp you are, how smart you are, how persuasive you are. Doesn't depend on your pedigree. Doesn't depend on your background. God placed treasure in earthen vessels because he trusted earthen vessels to do what he wants to do. You know, he could have written his message in the sky never to be erased. He could have left it on tablets of stone. And place those all over the world. He could have chosen any of a myriad number of ways to transmit his message from generation to generation. But he chose the paradoxical way of trusting that to flesh and blood, trusting that to us, trusting that to the church to be the conduit of his message. So when you say you can't do it, you're right, you can't, but God can. When you say you're not worthy, you're right, you're not. But God can make you worthy. All of our excuses, when they become convictions, and when we, in essence, then realize it is God working through us. The phrase he said, the surpassing greatness of his power is of God and not from ourselves. Literally, he said the hyperbole of dynamite. That's the transliteration of the word surpassing greatness and then power. The hyperbole of dynamite. The demonstration of God's hyperbolic dynamic power is that he chooses to work through you and through me. As long as we live, we'll never understand that. We have built a society of experts. We think we have to have experts to teach us in every facet of what we do. Sometimes I think we expert ourselves to death and miss the very simple solutions to a lot of problems. And God has always done things in a different way than the world has done them. God has always worked paradoxically. He saved the world through the message of Jesus' death on the cross. Jesus said, if you want to be first, you'll be what? You'll be last. If you want to be greatest, you'll be servant of all. God has always turned worldly wisdom on its ear and done the opposite. And so when he wanted to demonstrate his power, he chose human weakness to demonstrate that through. What better way than the obvious conclusion? It has to be God working through the Southside Church to do what you do. Nothing derogatory intended, but you're not smart enough. You're not good enough. And you're not energetic enough. But God can do that through you. And the beauty is you have allowed Him to do that through you. And He has worked and served in this community to where you are a light to people who hurt. You are a source of compassion. You are a church, a community of healing rather than one of judgment. You are a community of compassion rather than one of harshness. You are a church that invites people in rather than repels people at the door. And that is all that Jesus envisioned for His church. And it's a part I want. What I want to do is just encourage you to keep being what you have already become. And I understand we never reach the level of ultimate maturity that we will always be becoming, but I'm telling you, this church is demonstrating a gospel community. And people see that in the brotherhood away from here and the people in this community. You have served and you have worked and you have given yourselves in the lives of people. All the various ministries you have are God working through you to bring about what He wants. And so Paul says in ministry, this is how we feel in verse 8. We're afflicted in every way, but we're not crushed. We're perplexed, but we're not despairing. You ever felt like you're afflicted? You ever felt like you're crushed? You ever felt like you're persecuted? He said, but we're not forsaken. Have you ever felt struck down? But He says we're not destroyed, because we always carry about in the body the dying of Jesus, that the life of Jesus also may be manifested in our body. Here's the bottom line. You are a living message, not of any political party, not of any ideological persuasion, not of any current issue. You are a living messenger of the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus. The very thing that we read together this morning that is on the banner on your wall, that is our identity. And if our identity is anything other than that, we have missed the calling of what God intended for His church. If your identity is tied to some political persuasion, if that becomes front and center in your life, you missed it. We are to be about the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus. We carry about in our body the dying of Jesus, that the life of Jesus may be manifested in us. There could not have been a more perfect picture of what God intends than what happened in a courtroom 30 miles east of here this week, when an 18-year-old young man asked permission to get up and hug the person who took the life of his brother. The world didn't know how to understand that, didn't know how to interpret it. And you can dismiss all the social media comments about it because those are irrelevant. What we saw in that was the truest act of what Jesus would have done had He sat in that setting. The truest act of what Jesus did on the cross. He couldn't physically get down, but He said, "Father, forgive them, for they don't know what they're doing." Even in the act of defiance, Jesus demonstrated compassion and love. And that is to be the church. That is to be us to the world. What's unusual to me is that's not seen multiple times over in the church. That is so rare that it's made the world stand still one day this week as that video, which he didn't know the video was rolling, took a footage of him hugging the one who took the life of his brother. What better example of healing and community and carrying in our body the treasure of God than what that young man did? And that's what God calls us to do. It's what He calls you to do. I don't know where you're at in the life history of this church. You may be new here. You may have been here through the decades and generations. who have served in this place for a long time. But I can tell you this with certainty. There is a position of service in God's kingdom here at Southside for you. There is a role to play connecting in the lives of people who hurt by being the emissary of God's message to those who are struggling in this world. And sometimes that's us. We're struggling ourselves. And the community within itself needs to heal itself and to help itself. Oftentimes it's people outside that we need to be focused on and looking at. God trusted His treasure to you. I've got a strong feeling this morning, God looks down and says, that Southside Church has it right. That's exactly what I envisioned my people to do and to be doing. I wish all of my churches modeled that. But even within this church, don't ride the coattails of others who are doing work. If you're on the outside looking in, if you're a bystander wondering what to do, there are areas to serve. This morning, if you're outside of Christ and you don't know what to do to be a part of this family, it would simply be to confess Jesus as your Lord, to be immersed into Him, to walk out of these doors this morning having been born again and sharing the joy that comes with that. All throughout Scripture, Peter to the people on Pentecost, Philip to the Simon the sorcerer in Acts 8, Philip to the Ethiopian eunuch in Acts 8, Paul to the household of the Philippian jailer in Acts 16, Peter to the household of Cornelius in Acts 10. God has always trusted people to tell people. That's His chosen method of doing it. And in our enlightened day of 2019, that's still how He chooses to do it. Make yourself a yielded servant to Him. Because He looks at you and says, you're worthy, you're capable, you're my chosen means and my chosen vessel for the treasure that I have. And God will demonstrate the hyperbole of His power through your weakness. And so this morning, as we have the invitation, if you have a need to respond, elders will be stationed around here if you need to come forward and make a need known. We'd ask you to do it while we stand and sing.